This program was first broadcast on Canterbury's access media station, Plains FM, and was made with the assistance of New Zealand On Air.
Hello and welcome to 3-3-1-Cast. This podcast is your pit stop for a comedic but educational take on the crazy and illustrious world of Formula One.
We will take you through the latest news and happenings, while also offering our views and perspectives on the key moments, both on and off the track. So, to quote the great David Croft of Sky Sports F1,
it's lights out and away we go.
Hello and welcome back to episode 5 of the 3-3-1-Cast podcast. You're joined with me, Rory, Josh and Stephen. How are you, boys?
I'm very good, thank you. How are you?
Yeah, doing well. Steve is back in the studio after a wee hiatus for a couple of weeks. So, Steve, how have you been?
I've been very good. I'm pleased, very pleased to be back off work today and, back in the studio. Really excited for it.
Good, good. So, have you been enjoying the racing while you've been away?
Oh, the racing. I mean, the British Grand Prix that we've just had was some of the most amazing racing I think we've seen all season. And that those last final laps, it was crazy.
I could argue it was one of the best races I've watched ever. In 2 or 3 years of watching.
I've seen a lot of comments like that as well. Just at least this season, 100% been the best race. But and maybe a good wee while. A
lot of drama, things happening at the start and the end.
Huge crash.
Things that you can expect. I'm kind of glad I didn't make any bets because I don't think anything would have happened. I would have bet on Russell getting in the top 5, which did not happen. His streak is over. He's not longer Mr. Consistent.
It's gone. No, that's good. We'll get more into this sort of Silverstone Grand Prix as we get on, but I'll give you guys a wee update on the standing. So we had definitely a shift around in sort of race winners this weekend. So still leading the standings is Max Verstappen on 181 points, followed closely by Sergio Perez, who's people are sort of gently beginning to murmur about how he could be a bit of a dark horse in the sort of title chase, but you know, he's still 40 points adrift from Max. But in third place is Charles Leclerc and Carlos Sainz, who picked up his first Grand Prix victory of his career this weekend, followed by George Russell and Lewis Hamilton in fifth and sixth, and Lando Norris in seventh, Valtteri Bottas in eighth, and Esteban Ocon in ninth, and Fernando Alonso in tenth. And those are the sort of main ones we'll go for. But Red Bull are sort of running away with it at the moment. They're closing in about 80 points in front of Ferrari and the constructors.
Well, the other scary thing can be that Mercedes are closing in on Ferrari, and it's no longer like a question of who. I think Leclerc is now, you know, trying to battle for second at this point with Perez instead of first with Verstappen.
I think that's a bit of an outrageous claim.
Well, let's have a look. The points here: Leclerc at 138 and Perez at 147.
Yeah, I know Leclerc's behind Perez, but I think Leclerc has been incredibly unlucky in the last six races. He's had two of those where he should have won, but retirement. Yeah. I mean, that's 50 missing points.
Not just retirement, but also poor strategy from Ferrari.
It's cost them a couple times now.
You could argue, had they played the strategy different in Britain, or had the safety car not come out altogether, he probably would have won that race as well.
There was a point when they were obviously, Ferraris were racing each other, and there was no team orders, but they decided to pit Sainz first, and that kind of left the door open for Sainz to undertake and be back in it.
Where are you talking about?
This was halfway through.
About halfway through.
So they pitted Sainz before Leclerc.
Yes.
And that was poor strategy, because if they pitted Leclerc first, he would inevitably be the one that comes out in front later.
Yeah, I think they were just trying to maintain that they could, because they had that one car in the lead. I think they were just, Ferrari were all in on just give that guy the best run at it, you know, and it was pretty much putting Leclerc to the stake, really.
I'm trying to remember back to that part of it, because I think they were trying to cover Red Bull was the thing, because they had
they had to put one of them
because Perez would have been out of it. So who were they? No, they were trying to cover Hamilton. It was Lewis, because I'm just trying to see here. I've got when each driver pitted in front of me. So Lewis made it wasn't Lewis. I don't know what those are. I'm trying to remember. I'm trying to rack my brain now to see what they were doing. But, I mean, Verstappen pitted... Sainz pit first of everyone.
So that's what's interesting.
I don't actually know.
Is they kind of back signs, and I mean, that's it's nice in terms of we get to see more racing, like more interesting racing, but it's not a great strategy for Ferrari if they want to.
But that didn't cost Leclerc the race. Leclerc was still going to win that race. He had the fresher tyres. He made the overtake on Sainz, and the thing that ruined the race for him was the safety car right at the end.
Well, remember at the point, at the very end, where the team orders were, hey, Sainz, keep it slow and put a little gap behind you. And Sainz, once again, I think this is the second time now, he's ignored the team orders and come out ahead of Leclerc, who listens to the team orders, you know?
Well, no, that was definitely the way. And then you saw after the race, I think Charles Leclerc was actually pretty cut up, and I think he was sort of storming off, and Mattia Binotto sort of pulled him aside and said...
I don't think it was a very interesting moment
to see that, eh?
Yeah, because he's kind of their golden boy, you know? So I don't know whether they were instructing him that you need to keep it together and calm down, or... You know, like, yeah, we're sorry this happened. I don't know. I don't know what that chat was about.
The commentator said it was something like a reminder that you drive for Ferrari.
Don't disrespect the team was what he theorized.
Didn't Carlos disrespect the team then by, like, kind of...
Disobeying, passing Leclerc.
I'm too vulnerable to start making a gap.
I do think that ultimately... I think science has been taken a little bit out of context with... I think they asked him to do that, to back off, and I think he made a relative point back going, if I do that...
It's bad for everyone.
I'm getting backed into Hamilton. We can't do that. And I think that was the right call. He proved it was the right call.
And, like, obviously, the big thing about this race was that Sainz's maiden win in Formula One.
Absolutely.
After five runner-up races. So that's a very exciting... race for him.
Well, and I wonder how much that played into Ferrari's decision under the safety car. They pit Sainz but didn't pit Leclerc, and I wonder how much that played, because they were only separated by a couple of seconds, and if they had the time to pit Sainz, they could have also kept Sainz out and pit Leclerc.
I think Charles Leclerc was mismanaged, quite frankly.
But the reason that Ferrari's official explanation is that because Leclerc had the fresher tyres from earlier, they kept him out, because if they'd pit both of them, Sainz would have been held up in the pits waiting for Leclerc's stop. They weren't far enough apart. So essentially, realistically, the best strategy was to only pit one of them, and they chose Sainz because Sainz had
not as fresh
older
tyres.
Older tyres. Mm-hmm. And so in theory, but then I just wonder if there was a bit of, if we give this to Sainz here, this will get him a race win, and then both my drivers are race winners. I wonder how much that came into this.
Well, we know that Sainz needed this. Personally, for himself, he needed that win. It's been a long time coming. I'm kind of happy that they left them to race for a lot of it. There was a point where Sainz was not fast enough, and there was a team order.
Yeah, they told him to get out of the way, and
they gave Sainz a fair chance.
Man, that was a brutal comment, though. They were like, this is not good enough. We're swapping the cars. And he just
He immediately copied, and Leclerc was off.
But Leclerc was punching in so much faster laps with, like, missing bits on his front wing.
There was a lot of that. A lot of drivers driving with damaged things going.
I thought Leclerc's driving style reminded me very much of Verstappen that we saw last year in this race. Like, he just right at the very at the
he
second
took a
restart,
super risky.
So after the red flag and they restart, that restart he was just crazy into the, I think it was turn four. He just threw it up the inside of Perez and barged his way through.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. So what does that really say about him? He's clearly not feeling very comfortable. He needs to sort of fight his way through the field a bit more.
I reckon it says that he is like a world champion material, that he can push as hard as someone like Verstappen to get the wins that he knows he needs.
But he needs to maybe be a bit scrappier at the moment because, he's sort of, whether it's team orders or whatever's happening really, he's not sort of consistently running through victories like Max has been.
Let's just say it's tough to be a Leclerc fan at the moment because you do see him having poor luck.
You know,
he could be doing better. We all want to see him. He should have
won in Spain. He had the engine failure there.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Where was the other one? There was another one. Was it Monaco?
Monaco. He should have won Monaco.
Yeah, he was four. He came fourth in Monaco.
That was strategy. But there was another engine failure
one. Yeah, that was the Canadian, wasn't it?
Was that Was that Canada?
I think it was Canada.
Or was it? It was Azerbaizhan. Because remember, both the Ferraris went in Azerbaizhan.
The double DNF.
So you've got the Monaco botched strategy, Azerbaijan, and then essentially, I mean, the safety car ruined his race in Britain. So there's four races in the last six.
Yeah.
And that's why, if we go back right to the very original point, is why I don't think he's out of the championship yet, because he's fallen behind, not through poor performance, not because he doesn't have a car to win, but just because the luck hasn't gone his way.
It only takes, you know, this sort of luck to suddenly go into the Red Bull team and hit with Max, and you're right, he could be back in it. But it is also exciting to see Mercedes closing in and gradually making the car a little bit better.
Obviously it is still the third best car at the moment, and those Red Bulls are really fast down the straights, as everyone knows. But what about the other exciting point about the Silverstone?
A massive crash.
I don't know if I'd use the word exciting, but I was a little on edge when it took so long to get an answer whether he was okay.
Because he was trapped in the car for so long.
Was because he was okay, it was just he was weird.
So who are we talking about here, guys?
We're talking about Guan Yu Zhou.
Yeah, we are.
Zhou Guan Yu.
And just for context, if you haven't seen it, basically at the start of the race, the lights go out, they take off down the main straight, and before they get to the first corner, there's sort of a pincer between Gasly, Russell, and Zhou Guan Yu on the left. And the sort of nature of it is Gasly coming up the middle between the two other cars, sort of spikes Russell into the side of Zhou Guan Yu, whose car flips and then scrapes along the roof of the car, if you can even call it a roof.
Yeah, the roll hoop.
On the sort of roll hoop. And it skids for probably about 200 metres across the gravel, gets to the sort of safety fence, safety barriers, flips over that, and then goes base of the car first into the fence right by the fan. So
right,
it was a huge crash.
Ledge between, like, he was wedged in a gap essentially between the tyre barrier and the catch fence, which is probably not even a metre wide.
And it took, I think, between about 20 to 30 minutes to even get him out of the car and to even lift the car out from its crash position. There was a long period of time where people didn't really know if he was okay or not, and it was
because they never show footage of the crash until they know it's okay.
Yeah, and I mean, to put this in context, this is certainly the longest time that I've ever seen in a race where we've waited so long to know if a driver's okay. Apart from obviously maybe the 2014 Japanese Grand Prix when the driver wasn't okay, but if the one that everyone thinks of, the Grosjean crash in Bahrain. We knew within a minute that he was okay because he got out of the car so quick. But in this one, they didn't know for so long because they couldn't get him out. But fortunately, he was okay in the car.
Yeah, I mean, I saw Russell. He immediately got out of the car and sprinted over there to see if he was okay, which is pretty good.
But you know it's bad when other drivers are doing that. Mm, they're even hopping out and running over there.
I sort of thought at first, there was a comment I saw. I can't remember where I saw it, but someone said, you know, that George sacrificed his race to go check on Joe, which I'd love to know whether his Mercedes mechanics had enough time to tell him stop the car, or whether he did that. Because if you look at the damage on his car, right, a wheel has come off the back, but his car still looks vaguely drivable.
Oh.
And it does look like, instead of trying to continue on, he makes the decision of, I'm pulling up, I'm turning it off, I'm throwing the thing, and I'm going to check on him. Which really resonated with me, especially given what you talked about on the podcast last week, where you brought up again with Russell and his history about that incident in Imola and Bottas, where he probably didn't react as well as he could have to the accident. I thought it was a large change in his character.
Big growth.
Yeah, I do remember, though, a driver message coming in, him just saying, I'm out, obviously, and then switching the car off. So I don't know if that was more him saying, I'm out because I'm abandoning the car, I need to go check on Joe, or if it was, I'm out, the car's just not, it's not sounding right, or whatever.
Yeah, it's hard to know the circumstances, but I guess it sort of left the, I guess just watching the coverage, it sort of left the door open that he could have tried to go on, but he didn't.
Yeah, I mean, regardless, running over there, you know, you're still on an active racetrack. So.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
Yes, and of course, that race also took Albon out of... Well, that crash, sorry, took Albon out of it because there was a second, I think Vettel got into the back of...
Yeah, because sort of Ricciardo. Everyone started slowing down, and then Albon had to brake because someone was ahead of him braking, and then, the Constantino Vettel into the back of Albon.
I know Tsunoda was damaged. His front end was damaged.
Yeah, because what happened was Albon went into the inside wall and then careered across the track, and on his way through, he collected Ocon and Tsunoda.
Yeah, Ocon had... damage that was very hard to recover from.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. But well, at least he got back in the race.
He did. Like,
well, I guess Tsunoda did as well, didn't he? Because it's during the red flag they had that advantage if you can work on the car, so they were lucky in that respect. But did you guys see, I think I did mention it to you yesterday, about the protesters on the track?
Yeah, and see, I had no idea about this. Did you only see this because of the TikTok you saw?
Yeah, this was only on social media because they didn't cover it on the live broadcast, which I guess is sort of standard for sporting events. You don't show protesters on a field or a track or whatever. But there was a theory, I was talking to a guy today about it, and he questioned whether the red flag was... flown because of Joe, or whether it was flown because of the protesters.
Because about 6 or 7 climate change protesters dressed in orange shirts, right?
I think they were trying to mimic being marshals.
Being marshals,
They looked exactly like the marshals.
Well, I mean, I think they were also probably wearing it just on the off chance that they also don't get hit, you know, if the race control didn't stop the race.
It's bloody brave, because, I mean, it's one thing to do that on a highway or... you know, on any road, these cars are going a lot faster.
And it was scary to me in the footage that I've seen. They were sitting there and the rest of the field has gone through, but the two people who came through were Tsunoda and Ocon, who were both caught up in the first corner chaos. And so that sort of, I guess, suggests the timeline of when they got on, which must have been just after everyone else went through and then went back to the pits. And it's scary that they got that close, you know.
It's just crazy because this is like the first time I've ever heard of protesters occupying a road like that. When was the last time that happened?
I can tell you about that. We were going to have that for the, the Stephen's
down
mouse
the Stephen Moles hole.
But we could go into it now if you want.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, I think so.
So, yeah, the British Grand Prix, this isn't actually the first time the British Grand Prix has been invaded. So,
is it not? Okay.
Yeah, back in 2003 was one of the more famous incidents of a track invasion at Formula One. So it was 11 laps into the 2003 Grand Prix. The cars were coming down the hangar straight after Maggots Beckett, which is the fast left-right... is it you go in... I'm getting a bit off topic, but after one of the fast sections coming in, and a guy called Neil Horan cleared the fence wearing a kilt.
Protesting anything.
Yeah, no, okay. He was protesting. He had his banners with statements, "Read the Bible," and "The Bible is always right," and ran towards the sequence of cars, forcing several cars to swerve to avoid him.
Wow.
He was eventually he's running down the straight and a marshal gets on track and tackles him off and drags him over to the side of the track. But they deployed the safety car straight away. But there is a really scary one where I think it was David Coulthard was on the back, like behind someone, and comes out of this Maggots Beckett's complex and pulls to the inside to like sort of start the overtake down the straight, and then he sees him and you see him sort of swerve back, and it's freaky.
And that's why I really think that this is the wrong race to bring protesting to, because it is such a dangerous, not just for yourself but for the drivers to go out and occupy those roads.
I think just any race
like that,
because these cars are just going so fast. But this guy, so Neil Horan, is quite well known for kind of being protesting at notable
being a bit
events.
Outspoken.
He also invaded the 2004 Summer Olympics men's marathon in order to promote his religious belief that the end times are near.
So, mental.
So that one's pretty famous in the scheme of track invasions. There was another one in the German Grand Prix. I think that was about 2000. I'll see if I can actually find some history on that one. But that was another one. This was at the old German track, which was essentially super duper long straights through a forest. And he basically got in the forest and then jumped the fence and was on the track.
So it's this one guy is like the he upholds the history of invading F1 tracks.
This was a different guy, the German guy. So the German guy, this was in the 2000 German Grand Prix. His name was Robert Seely, apparently, I'm reading here. And yeah, during the 2000 German Grand Prix in Hockenheimring, he's a disgruntled ex-Mercedes employee. He'd recently been terminated from his job of 22 years due to health reasons. And he ran with a white raincoat and anti-Mercedes messages on it. And he ran across... So there's one point where the cars are coming down the track and he's on one side and then they pass him and then he runs to the other side. And then the, another few pass him and everything. And they... yeah, the marshals got him. And yeah, he was all okay. But
I'm really interested to think, because these are individuals, really interested to think what would have happened if there was no crash and those cars inevitably came up to this row of protesters occupying the road.
Were they in like a row?
They were just sitting on the road.
Sitting. Far. Yeah. Right.
There was a small gap that. Because there was a point where they were sitting on the track, so this is the one that's just happened in the British Grand Prix. They were sitting in the track, and Ocon and Tsunoda both went past. I think they were just pulling them off when Ocon went past, but when Tsunoda went through, it was literally, there was a point where it would have been Tsunoda and then protesters next to him.
Yeah, but scary stuff. If nothing had happened, the race would have had to be halted, you know, or... slowed down.
Well, that goes back to my theory of, did they actually throw the red flag because of the protesters and not because of the crash? Who knows?
Who knows?
I mean, it's one of the things we will never know.
But it all worked out, I guess.
It all worked out, yeah.
It all worked out well in the end. But
I mean, if you want to protest climate change, that's great. Good message, cool. Maybe don't risk your lives doing it.
And anyone else's,
that's true.
Yeah,
because if a driver came round, like some blind corner, and then had to throw it into the wall because they panicked, and that was the only thing that happened. How gutted
it
that.
Would completely reverse anything you're protesting because everyone would just be really against what you have done.
Yeah,
absolutely.
You
know?
It's dangerous, man. Oh, it's crazy. I mean, so much happened this weekend. So, yeah, anyone at home hasn't watched the race, I suggest you watch the highlights or at least watch the replay.
The last 10 laps. We've spoiled most of it now.
Yeah, but certainly those last 10 laps since the post the safety car, essentially, once the safety car restarted.
It was just so exciting. So many overtakes.
Yeah.
People, you know, Hamilton's in the lead and then Perez overtakes.
Did you have like a favourite moment of it? Because I have one.
Tell me,
sticks out was when, I think it was Leclerc and Perez battling and Perez was trying to get past Leclerc and then they came through the final corner and Leclerc went wide and Perez went
then
wide
Hamilton
and then Hamilton snuck through on the inside.
It was like, where's this guy? Like, three-way battle.
Yeah, and you heard the crowd roaring.
Yeah, they did.
And
they
was
roared.
Amazing.
They
but
love
I
Hamilton
think,
there.
Do you know what made that so special is I think the fact, not only was it three cars battling, but three different teams.
Yeah.
You know, like
it's so
it wasn't
cool.
even
and
like...
it's not very common to like, in the top, like... You know.
Well, this season it's been like a two-horse race between Red Bull or Ferrari, really, for pole. But finally, we saw something else. You know, it was so exciting.
So cool.
And then even my second favorite moment then was after that sequence where then Perez re-overtook Hamilton and Leclerc squeezed past Hamilton again, and then all that fighting meant that Alonso and Norris got onto the back.
They closed.
So there
up,
was
yeah.
a moment. It was five. Through Loughfield, which is one of the kind of every corner at Silverstone's famous, but. Through Loughfield, there was a point where it was literally all five of them in a train, five different cars.
You've got
Norris, Alonso, Hamilton, Leclerc and Perez. Like, amazing.
Signs is long gone.
Yeah,
so he's already. Yeah,
but it was, and I mean, David Croft drew attention to it at the time, sort of saying, "Look at all these five teams," but they did, and one camera shot. All of them going through that
Let's
corner.
Just
I just
say,
thought that was amazing.
When I'm watching races on my own, I'm not often making noise, right? Because I'm kind of just sitting there watching. But these last 10 laps, I was on my feet. I was yelling. I was like exhilarated.
Yeah.
It was so exciting.
It does that to you, eh? Like, yeah. Such good racing, yeah. So
I thought it really summed up in that moment what these new regulations were about that we've seen introduced for 2022.
Yeah.
Like, making the racing better, making it closer, making it more exciting. I mean, that was racing at its best.
Yeah. Now, that was very exciting for the, like, kind of laps 47, 48. But then for the last couple laps, all the focus was back with Verstappen and Schumacher in 8 and 7. Well, there was a time when, I swear, they were focusing on them for so long.
Yeah.
I was like,
yeah.
Right, we get the point. And even the commentators started talking about things happening elsewhere, probably trying to insinuate, let's get away from this.
It was when they sort of missed the build-up to Sainz getting past Leclerc at the restart, because it did... This is just, I guess, another comment about the general TV direction that they were. I can't remember who they were focusing on, but they were focusing on someone else at the restart, and then they sort of cut to, oh, here's science going up the inside of Leclerc,
which was one of the best moments because it was like not expected at all.
Yeah, well, he did it so quickly, and it won him the race, to be honest.
But like, how about the fact that Schumacher, who is finally in the points, you know, like it's been a long time coming, is risking it all to pass Max Verstappen in P7 and really getting in there.
I think it's good though.
It's a risky moment.
But like, as a young driver who's obviously like, he doesn't plan to stay at Haas his whole career and he wants to impress, I think if he nailed an overtake on Verstappen and claimed seventh, he would have been even better. It would have been like the absolute cherry on top.
I was rooting for him.
Yeah.
I think people like him must be wired like that to not look at what you could lose from doing this, but look at what you could gain.
I mean, the old Senna quote.
That's very fair.
Yeah, like just imagine, you know, the scenes of last lap overtake from Mick Schumacher to pass Max Verstappen.
It would make a legendary status.
Yeah, it would be a legendary moment. And in the end, you know, it didn't work out, but he didn't lose either. So
did you guys see that Sebastian Vettel interview with him afterwards?
That's a wholesome moment.
So wholesome.
I didn't see it, but I saw the moment where like Vettel came over to him and I didn't really see the full interview.
Vettel basically declared in an interview afterwards that he was yelling in the car, "Go Mick, go Mick."
I love the camaraderie between those two.
Yeah, it's certainly a very sort of fatherly relationship that Seb has with
absolutely
Mick.
Yeah,
imagine if they were teammates, it would be great, wouldn't it?
Oh, but tough as well, because I think Vettel was still saying, like, you know, I was hoping to overtake you, like they're still racing, they'd still be racing each other. How is it, so it is possible for two drivers of the same team to be good friends, right? Like,
well, I think we saw it with Sainz and Norris when they were at McLaren.
They were mates.
Drive to Survive would make you think differently, but I think for most people that was a friendly friendship.
Seems like Gasly and Tsunoda are quite close
as
well.
Not anymore.
Not
after this race.
Yeah, so I mean, it was kind of Tsunoda's fault.
It was a very lazy sort of incident from Tsunoda,
It was so unnecessary,
But then, to give him the benefit of the doubt, I wonder how much damage he's had from that first lap incident that made the car difficult to drive.
I heard even Latifi had some damage. Well, his Instagram post that he made, he said that he crawled back into places because of a bit of damage he sustained in the first
I'm not surprised that you've seen Nicholas Latifi.
Yes, I follow Latifi very closely. I love this
man. Did you send him a congratulations message as well?
If you go on Instagram, you'll see me commenting, "I love you, Latifi," with a love heart.
What, on our 331 cast
Instagram? No, my personal account on Latifi, "I love you, Latifi," with a love heart. Because I do.
How does your girlfriend feel about this conflict?
It's fine. Because,
is she really the favourite person in your life?
No. Latifi is my idol. He's my hero.
Do you look up to him? Everything he's achieved,
you know.
Well, I mean, I know we joke about him a lot on the show, but I mean, look at his qualifying performance.
Exactly.
And to add an insult to injury, he had the old car, and Albon had the new car.
He did it.
He showed him up
with the old car. I mean, he had rain on his side. Kind of on his side. It evened the playing field.
Sure. Sure.
But he was able to prove, look, he belongs here. He belongs in Formula One. You know,
he's not the worst of the best.
I thought he made a solid case. I thought he made a solid case or the beginnings of a solid case to keep his seat.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Yeah. And
I know you're joking about it. And really? it might be a done deal that he's losing his seat to Oscar Piastri.
This might just give him, you know, two more races to prove himself.
I disagree. I mean, look, you're only as good as your last race, and that also works the other way, right? So if he kicks on and actually does pretty well the rest of the season, sure, I'm sure that conversation will be had. But yeah.
He had a real chance to keep his P10 because there were so many DNFs behind him that he could have kept it, but, you know, maybe it was damage or maybe it was Schumacher, because Schumacher passed him around lap 30 or something.
Oh, okay.
But to go back to Schumacher, he came back from P19 to get to P8.
Oh, really? Was he? I didn't realise that.
Yeah.
So that is really impressive.
Yeah.
And even Magnussen to get into P10, you know, for a double Haas finish.
Yep.
Yeah, I have to admit, I probably wasn't watching wasn't as interested in those guys,
no.
Considering all the action up front. But,
yeah, so much was going on even back there.
Exactly.
Yeah, what do you guys think about, you know, we're sort of halfway into the season now, or at least we've had 10 races. What do you guys think about the like I think the worst team, the most underperforming team this year has been Aston Martin.
Yeah, biggest, certainly in terms of relative performance from the year before, and expectations of what you expected, Aston is not being...
Has that been kind of just mistakes on the day, like kind of judging the qualifying wrong?
I think it's more the car is not got a lot of race pace.
I agree, yeah. I don't think their car has sort of been up to scratch. It's
So it might look like a Red Bull, but it doesn't drive like a Red Bull.
Correct.
Certainly doesn't.
Yeah, I mean, they've just built brand new huge factory, so I think like the investment and the plan for the team is there for the long haul, which is good. You'd imagine then they would work to turn it around, but yeah, certainly not been a good season.
Because you'd love to... I mean, I wouldn't mind being an Aston Martin fan. I like the colours, I like the drivers. That's pretty much
that's all you care about.
But yeah, it's hard to really be a fan of Aston Martin.
I mean, it'd be awesome to see Seb Vettel like still doing really well.
Yeah. Especially because he's such a awesome guy.
Well, I think he did get disqualified in the end, but the podium at Azerbaijan last year, when he finished P2, and in Hungary as well.
Yep.
It was Hungary where he was disqualified.
Well, see, now that was a pure just the team making a mistake on the day with the fuel, because he got disqualified for fuel. Yeah. So, you know, there are...
But, like, I don't expect to see a result from Aston like that this year. Like, it just doesn't look like your car has that potential to be near the pointy end of the midfield. They're just sort of relishing at the back of the midfield.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think, like... The only slightly random victory I could foresee happening is probably a Mercedes victory at some point. I think they'll probably get it together to get a double at some point.
I honestly thought that this was going to be the weekend.
Did you? Yeah. Well, you know, Lewis is always quick at Silverstone.
Up until that safety car, I thought Lewis had it in the bag.
Oh.
What's funny is that, like, it was all kind of lined up for him to win, because apparently it's only ever taken him 10 races to get his first win in a season.
Yes, that's right.
So this was the 10th race. It was 2009 and 2000.
The longest time it took him to get a win is 2013.
Okay.
Yeah.
And he got it at the 10th race.
Yeah, which was in Hungary, which is another one of his favourite tracks. Silverstone and Hungary are probably... Silverstone, Hungary and Canada are Lewis's strongest tracks, I think, statistically.
Wait, did you say which one? Silverstone?
Silverstone, Britain, Hungary and Canada, which we've just been to as well.
Well, I mean, he had the... home advantage, well, kind of the home advantage. He had the crowd that really...
I think home advantage in Britain is especially one of the reasons. But.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know him. He loves the fans.
He loves the fans. He's absolutely always thinking the fans.
Do you think this is a good segue into our debate?
Well, look.
Our pre-planned debate. I'm very excited about
for
this.
For context, Josh is a little genius when it comes to our social media, and he likes to put up some great TikToks, but Josh definitely let his opinion filter into his recent TikTok, and it came out and it got a bit of a heavy reception, sort of a 50-50 bit of backlash.
I would say it's been more towards like anti, like backlash about what I said.
Okay,
yeah.
So I'll mediate this debate, because Stephen is against this TikTok. Josh was obviously for it by creating it.
So I have the opinion of it.
So Josh, what was your TikTok saying?
Okay.
Give us a bit of context.
So Lewis Hamilton's post-race interview, what I noticed was that within this interview and then in the cool-down room, so within 5 minutes, he had mentioned 4 times that a Ferrari or a Red Bull were faster, you know, faster down the straights. They're so fast down the straights, I can't beat them faster down the straights. And it kind of just struck me as a little bit like, I want to like Lewis, you know, I like what he stands for and all these other things, but I just think he complains all the time about either the team strategy is not in his favour, or the tyres, or the car itself. And he's, instead of, you know, admitting, hey, like, Perez did a great job to get from the back of the grid to second, he's going, the Red Bull is so fast down the straight, which kind of insinuates to me that it's impossible for him to beat the Red Bull, or like it's just he can't do anything about it. But no, it's also the driver behind the Red Bull that has outdone you, Hamilton. It's not just the car, in my opinion.
So that's Josh's side.
Okay.
Stephen, would you like to say your thoughts?
Yeah, I'm not actually somewhat disagreeing. I fully disagree with the... I just think that Hamilton had that race in the bag. Well, not maybe not in the bag, but he was on for a good result in that race. He was the fastest car before the safety car. He was catching the Ferraris. He had a chance to win, and the safety car neutralised it. He questioned at the time whether the soft tyre was the right tyre for him to be put on. He didn't think it was, clearly. Mercedes overruled him and put him on the soft tyre. In hindsight, he was, you know, this wasn't as quick as he was on the hard tyres on the softs. But I think what he's saying, you're obviously saying that this is his opinion, that, you know, that Red Bull's faster and everything. But I think what he is saying is just cold hard facts, that the Red Bull is quicker in the straight, the Ferrari is quicker in the straight, the Mercedes car, I don't think there's any denying, is not at a race-winning level.
Yeah.
And if anything, I think Hamilton as a driver was the only reason he was competitive in that race. With the car, to me, wasn't a race-winning car, but he was driving it to its absolute limit on the hard tyres and put himself in a position to win.
Yeah, I won't deny he did a really good race.
Yeah, so I don't think, I don't know, I just don't agree with that he should have to take responsibility, you know, say it's his fault when what he's saying is
do you not think,
to me
though,
entirely true.
For a lot,
Ferrari is faster.
For parts of that race, though, he was the fastest car on track.
Yeah, he had the fastest car on track, but I don't think that was because the Mercedes car was the fastest car. I think it was because he was driving the rails off that car.
Yeah. See, the thing is, and a lot of the comments on the TikTok seem to think that I am not actually, like, I give credit to Hamilton that he did a really good race and that the safety car might have screwed him over and things. The thing that I took issue with is that the only real ideas that came out of that interview was that all the other cars that he was competing with were so much faster than him down the straights or whatever. And, you know, like, how about he just admits, like, first of all, he could just be happy with a P3. I know that's not a winning mindset.
Yeah,
I
know, that's not a good argument.
He's won the championship for the last, but you know, it's just 6 years.
It's just the attitude of, like, within 5 minutes to complain about it four times. It's like...
So I think the message here is that the delivery of Lewis's sort of ideas on why he finished third was, you know, portrayed poorly. And Stephen thinks, what do you think, Steve?
Well, I think he was right to be in, like, obviously, I think, would it be fair to say your main complaint is that he, or one of your main complaints is that he's frustrated, you know, he's not happy with P3
and
annoyed, whereas I think that's how he should have been in that situation, because he was on for a chance to win and the safety car blew it.
Yeah, but I mean, he didn't mention the safety car at all.
He may not have mentioned it, but I think just the general aura of frustration was,
yeah,
was
there. I wonder if, though, and this is maybe slightly more on Josh's perspective, that the whole world knows that the Mercedes car isn't very good. Everyone knows of all the problems they've had, right?
Yeah.
So I guess if he, like, that's just such a known fact, but I feel like he just doesn't want to acknowledge any, I don't know, like, I guess hearing him sort of talk about it
was media training, you know?
Yeah, maybe
blame everyone else but not, yeah, you know, to take the attention away from our car.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking it is, maybe. I don't know, but yeah.
I think
the other thing maybe just to think about is that he was only chasing cars up until the safety car, then the safety car happens, the tyre advantage gets neutralised, he's on the tyre that doesn't suit the Mercedes, and that's when he's then racing, and he's, you know, not, you know, doesn't have the car quick enough to drive by on the straights.
Yeah.
And he got held up fighting Perez and Sainz, Perez and Leclerc, and he couldn't make a challenge on Sainz.
All I can say is I really appreciate that we're having a debate that is, like, you know, respectful of each other's side, whereas some of the comments are just triggered because they honestly, first of all, they forget the fact that this is my opinion. And they're telling me to shut the hell up and all this other stuff, like, I don't know what I'm talking about.
146 comments.
Yeah,
146
yeah.
hate comments.
Well, yeah.
Are you going to read some of them out? Because Oh, yeah, yeah. This one's agreeing with it. It's facts, though. The Red Bull is significantly faster on the straights.
Yeah. But I'm not denying that the Red Bulls are faster on the straights.
You're
just
complaining that his whinging is
no, fast. You're right. The 7-time world champion should just be happy that he can't compete with other cars on the straights. Yeah, his standards are the greatest of all time. Finishing P3 is not impressive to him. Where's all this abuse you're talking about? I want to see that.
There's some down there where
it's terrible that I say that, but
you know, STFU, you don't know what you're talking about.
Oh, just shut the F up and go educate yourself. At least just go and compare the car data and you see how much Swear word, you say.
Yeah, Josh, because, like, compare the car data, mate. Come on, before you make a TikTok.
Because
learn,
I'm just...
Oh, this one cuts deep. Learn the sport and the cars before posting this. Oh.
But I just find it funny because I'm just lying there, I see this thing, I film it, I'm posted it within 5 minutes and I forget about it. And people get so mad that I'm attacking their boy, Hamilton. I mean, I guess I respect that. You know, you're defending your man and all that stuff.
Yeah.
But it's quite good to get engagement.
It's good to get engagement. So if you guys want to jump over and see more controversial TikToks, follow us on 3Pre1Cast.
It literally was a poor strategy. What is wrong with some people? Always trying to find ways to make Lewis look bad and throw him down.
Yeah, Josh. Ooh, I mean, that's true. Yeah, yeah. Wow, so we don't have too much time.
Should we jump into Beat the Boss?
Yeah, that would be good.
So now that our boss is back, Stephen's obviously been away for the last couple of weeks, it's nice that he's back. We like to do our section, Beat the Boss, where we test him on a couple sort of slightly out there Formula One facts to see just how much of a boss of Formula One he is.
I'm cracking my knuckles in anticipation.
Okay, best of five or, you know, something like that. We'll see.
Are you wanting to go first?
I can do something first. Should we do one by one?
Let's go one by one.
All right. So, obviously, this race saw a double points finish for Haas, which is very exciting.
Yes.
But it's not the first time that Haas have finished in the double points. Yes. Can you tell me the last race?
The last race that they finished two cars in the points.
Yeah.
Was it in Italy?
No.
Okay, it wasn't in Italy.
Okay, I will give you, you can either tell me the year or the race.
Tell me the year.
So, okay, it was 2019.
It was in 2019, and they finished double points
in a race.
And obviously,
Magnussen and Grosjean.
2019. Magnussen, Grosjean, 2019, finished double in the points. I'm trying to think of, like, if there was a chaotic race.
Do you want me
to
give you a hint?
Okay,
well, they finished 8 and 7.
Yeah, I was going... Well, I wasn't... Yeah. I wasn't thinking they were winning.
Second and third.
Wasn't on the podium.
That, you remember that, yeah.
I'm trying to think of a chaotic 2019 race. I know in the British Grand Prix last time it was a bit crazy, but probably not a race where they would have won. Was it towards the end of the season? Do you know?
Is it
in Europe?
Yes.
It is in Europe, okay.
It's in July.
Oh, well, then it might be the British Grand Prix.
No, it's not.
Not Britain? Well, then it must be Hungary.
No, it's the German Grand Prix.
Germany was... Oh, that's terrible that I didn't remember. Germany was absolute calamity.
That is a win for
that's
us.
1-0. Yeah, 1-0 to us.
Because that was
F1 noobs.
That was the race where Lewis started 14th and won.
Yes, so he qualified...
He qualified 14th.
And he won. No, that's not that
race.
Or is
that 2020?
No, sorry, because it says qualifying, he was
that
first.
Was, yeah, but then Vettel, because this is 2019, right? Vettel crashed out of the lead. No, I'm sure of this. Hamilton
qualified. So Vettel got second.
No, this can't be.
The German Grand
Prix. I'm thinking of 2018. I'm thinking of 2018.
Come on, Stephen. 2019, mate.
I mean, look. Yeah.
Or is it the 2020 German Grand Prix? I must be thinking of... What year did... Oh, no, so it was 2018 that Lewis qualified 14. Oh, I'm sorry.
Still, that's an interesting fact.
I'm bungling my German Grand Prix history.
Was that at
Hockenheim or at Nürburgring? No, it would have been Hockenheim.
It is... The location is Hockenheim.
Hockenheim.
Yeah.
Something else crazy happened in the 2019 Hockenheim.
Well, I mean, think Haas finishing in the points. Something must have happened that was crazy.
So Hamilton...
The race was won by Max Verstappen after starting second in a dramatic wet race.
Oh, okay.
Pole sitter Lewis Hamilton led the race until lap 27 when he crashed behind the safety car, losing the lead
in
his front wing.
Yeah. And Leclerc crashed out as well.
He was at Alfa Romeo or was he at Ferrari by then?
No, he was at Ferrari and he crashed into the wall in the rain and Hülkenberg crashed out. I should have thought of Germany straight away when he said this.
Yeah. Because that's what probably gave Haas a chance to get
the
way in. I knew it was a crazy race. Yeah.
There we go.
Yeah, Verstappen won in the rain.
Okay, I'll come up with my next one because we've
got... Bottas had a big... Sorry, it's all flooding back to me. And Bottas did the big spin and into turn one and bottled his chance to win.
Yes.
Right, I'm done.
You're just like, you pull a little pin out of this balloon and it just flows out of him. All right, so the next one, as we have only a matter of minutes to close, who are the top three drivers in Formula One history with the highest number of races before they eventually won one?
Well, Sergio Perez is one of them.
I need the order. Number three, number two, and number one.
Sergio Perez is number one. Yeah, you're not going to tell me whether I got that right. Okay. So the longest gap between waiting to win a race. Mm, is that what you're
correct.
Saying? Okay, so Sergio Perez, Carlos Sainz must be up there, because I'm thinking Perez was 190, Sainz is 150. And so who else would have taken ages? Is Yano Trulli one of them? No, because he was only 114 or so. Mm. So no, it wouldn't be Yano Trulli. There's
so
someone I'm missing.
You've got Sergio Perez number one,
Jensen
Carlos
Button?
Sainz number two.
Jensen
and
Button?
Who are you putting in as number three?
He's going Jensen Button.
Is it potentially Jensen Button? I'm just going to be happy if I get the three, but I doubt I will. There's someone I'm missing. I know there's someone older who is older that I'm missing, and I want to say, I don't know why this name is coming to me. I could be completely
go with it.
Wrong.
Just go with
the
it.
The name coming to me is Andrea de Cesaris.
Okay, you've locked
is
that in.
Is that locked in?
Yeah,
that's
yeah.
locked in. So number one was Sergio Perez.
Yeah, okay, I got
number
Sergio
two
Perez. I knew that.
Was Carlos Sainz.
Oh, really? Wow. So that yes, yeah, so I did.
And number three,
yeah,
was Mark Webber.
Mark Webber.
Webber.
Oh, okay.
With how many?
The 2009 German Grand Prix.
Yeah. So that's another one for us, I think, Josh. We're
that's
gonna be
that's two to us.
Do you
want to
quickly rattle through?
Yeah, no, we got to, you know, just below 10 minutes. So.
Yeah.
Cool. What do we do? Are we doing this and then predictions?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sweet.
Sweet as. So
think
here's one for you. So this is another one with the Carlos Sainz getting his first maiden win.
Yeah.
So he's the first to become... this is something slightly different. So Carlos Sainz officially becomes the first driver since... who to convert his first pole to his first win?
The answer to that question will be. I know this.
His first driver to convert his first pole to his first win since.
First driver to convert first pole to first win, it would be.
I have to say, I didn't know Sainz had never gotten a pole before.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a long time coming. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, this is...
I think I know this.
Ooh.
I think it's the cheat that I'm thinking of is I know that they said this on the commentary, and I'm trying to remember who they said now, but I remember thinking it was someone a bit older, and I'm trying to think of someone who won... Oh, I know, Pastor Maldonado.
Correct.
Got it.
And that's
got
what
it.
You're going to say.
Yeah.
Yes, so...
Pastor Maldonado in the 2012 Spanish Grand Prix.
Yeah, so... Pastor Maldonado, he remains the most recent Williams driver to win
Though,
a race as...
I would technically argue that he didn't get pole that day because Lewis got pole but got disqualified.
Is that right?
Yeah. So I don't know.
Are you arguing with the history books?
He technically gets considered the pole sitter because he starts from first, but he didn't set the fastest qualifying time. He didn't... Lewis set the fastest qualifying
but
time.
Why did Lewis get disqualified?
I can't remember.
Let's just say he got disqualified because, you know, something was wrong.
Maybe he whinged too much.
Oh, come on, leave him alone. But no, I... But I don't know who it would be before that then.
But no, I think that's fair to say. He started at first.
The rule books tell you that he got pole position, but...
Pastor Maldonado, Venezuelan.
It's just like in 2012 in Monaco when Michael Schumacher set the fastest lap in Monaco qualifying, and it was an amazing lap. This was like the peak of Michael Schumacher's return, this
yeah.
amazing Monaco pole lap. But he had a 5-place grid penalty from the race before, and so he got shunted down to P6 and didn't get pole. And it's just like one of the greatest robberies.
That is
in
frustrating.
Formula 1.
Yeah.
Because it would have been like a cool mark of, you know, Schumacher's return wasn't, you know, he didn't win a race, he got one podium. He wasn't the same sort of driver except mm-hmm. for this day in Monaco.
And he got cheated
yeah,
of it.
Yeah.
All right, well, that's 2-1.
2-1, all right. I've got a short one for you.
Okay.
Who,
I like these.
Who is the oldest Formula One driver to win a world championship?
Oh, to win a world championship?
Who's the oldest world champion?
Oldest world champion.
As in, he won
the world championship
as the oldest driver.
Is the oldest driver. Is it Nigel Mansell?
Would you like to lock that in?
Come on. I'm thinking Mansell for some reason, but it could also be Prost, I think, because Prost was getting on. But no, it might even be older than that. Can you give me an era? What era did they win their championship?
I'll
admit, we'll if I get this, we can halve the points.
Yeah.
I feel like if I tell you the era, you'll know it immediately.
Well, give me...
It was between 1950 and 1970.
Oh, okay. Oldest driver. Is it Jackie Stewart then?
Would you like to lock that in?
I don't know if I will. No. It's. Oh, you're hearing me clip my finger. It's Niki Lauda. Surely it's Niki Lauda.
Juan Fangio.
Oh, was it? Oh, okay.
Yeah. So we're up another point, Josh. Up another point.
Okay. Yeah. So it's
three. He was 47 years old.
Oh, wow.
Where he collected his final world title. It was his fifth world title in 1957.
Oh, okay.
And I'll tell you what, guys. There's two things we forgot to do this podcast. I was going to tell you guys about how I watched the McLaren movie. Bruce McLaren movie, which is really good.
Bill McLaren, Josh.
Yeah, Bill McLaren.
No, it's actually Bruce McLaren.
Thank you, because you would have actually convinced me.
Yes.
No.
And also, I don't want to sound silly to any first-time listeners, because it is Bruce McLaren.
It is Bruce McLaren, and I will have to give those, because I've got some interesting thoughts about that movie a very important New Zealand.
We can bring that up next time.
What reminded me there is that in that older era, you know, these drivers were doing so many different things. They weren't just Formula One drivers. They were engineers, and they were racing for all sorts of things. And
absolutely,
they were racing for pride. There was no real sort of money in it. I guess it was status.
Yeah,
and
it wasn't a professional sport like it is now.
And Bruce McLaren is one of those guys who did multiple things.
Yeah.
So should we just say we won this beat the bus segment?
I think you won.
I think so.
We won it 3-1. Yeah, so that's
struggled a bit with that one.
That's all right. There were some tough ones in there. No, you did well.
Well, because last time we kind of handed it to him.
Yeah, we did.
I don't know 1950s, to be honest.
Better do your research.
We had to step ourselves up because last time you were too easy.
Yeah,
I'll go read the books.
Shall we close on some predictions for the Austrian Grand Prix?
Yeah, let's do it. Who's got one?
So
I do not have one.
Yeah,
neither do I.
I feel like I'm so almost still sort of thinking about Silverstone so much. I haven't even had the time to think about Austria.
Well, the one that I want to happen, so I'm going to make it my prediction, is Latifi to finish in the points.
Oh. Would you like to make a bet with me on that?
What's the odds?
I will pay you $10 if he does, but if he doesn't, you pay me $5.
No way. Right. That's terrible odds. I thought maybe you'd say a dollar.
Yeah, that's how little you back him to the points. Fair enough.
Yeah, I feel like if you're realistically going to make that
okay,
prediction,
okay, do we want a realistic prediction?
You need to put some money.
Realistic.
Your prediction, you have to be able to put money on it.
Right. Well, I can't put money, so my realistic prediction is Leclerc is going to win.
Interesting.
Because it's been a long time coming, and he's got the fire in him now, let's say.
See, my prediction was actually going to be the opposite, that I thought Red Bull was going to win because Austria is Red Bull's home track.
Mm. Oh.
You know, bit of hometown advantage.
That's a good point.
Turn things on, look nice. And I'm just trying to think of where have we seen, I'm trying to think of, because Austria is sort of a fast track, very engine dependent. So whoever's kind of got the strongest engine is probably going to win. But I'm trying to think who actually does have the strongest engine. It could be interesting to see where the reliability comes in.
Mercedes is the most reliable, right?
Yeah.
Wow.
Well,
of the top three.
They've not had any major issues apart from just having a pretty poor car in the first place.
Yeah, engine DNF things.
No.
Yeah, whereas I guess we saw in Azerbaijan with both Ferraris having engine problems. So potentially that could be a worry for Ferrari is reliability.
Not to mention, you know, any other team that uses a Ferrari engine also has problems, like Alfa Romeo.
Yep. Haas.
Mm. Yeah.
I think George Russell will be back to avenge his poor Silverstone Grand Prix. I think he'll finish third. I do think Max will win the race, and I'm undecided who'll be in second. I think as well Mick Schumacher will go back to back and claim points for the second time.
He's got confidence now.
Yeah,
because this has been on him like
I think so just judging by his interviews after the race, he was so elated. I just think, you know, that must have been weighing on him. Pretty much all comments this year about Mick has been, but no world championship points, has he? So that's off him now. I think hopefully he uses this to springboard him into some more consistency. So Mick in the points, George in third, Max wins his home Grand Prix. That's my prediction.
Yeah. I wonder, do we have time for one more quick thing?
How are we doing
for time? I have no idea.
2 minutes?
2 minutes, okay. One thing I guess I'm watching for, sort of a prediction, is when Sergio Perez won his first race of the season, Monaco, he went to the next race and out-qualified Max Verstappen.
Okay.
I wonder if we're going to see the same dynamic between Sainz and Leclerc. Sainz has got his first win of the season. Will he come to, you know, will he come to Austria and lay down a marker to Leclerc?
So far, has Leclerc outqualified Sainz?
No, I'm not sure if he's done it in every race, but Leclerc is, I mean, let's face it, Leclerc's been the quicker of the two.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I wonder if Sainz will show up in Austria and be either a lot closer to him or ahead. But then again, you know, if I think about my threshold of putting money on it, I wouldn't bet money on Sainz.
Nah, because Leclerc is still there.
So can you make
something
one
I'm watching, but
Leclerc is.
Can you make one concrete prediction before we
my
go?
My one concrete prediction is actually, I'm just thinking of the characteristics of Austria. It's sort of a fast track. There's kind of only really one or two genuine overtaking spots. Given the sort of the calamity we saw in Britain, I wonder if some of that's going to continue on into Austria. And I reckon there'll be at least proper, good, decent, well, that sounds a bit weird, but like car on car contact between the two Ferraris, the two Red Bulls. There'll be a crash of some kind that forces at least one of them into the pits or something. Like they not just car banging. Oh, like I'm talking about something that might, you know, damage a front wing or puncture a tyre.
Not enough to get you out of the race.
Not yet. Yeah. Well, potentially
it could be enough.
I'm saying anything up from
that's a very safe
to the car
bet
to damage in the car to full on retirement.
Yeah, I mean they were so close to each other throughout Silverstone Grand Prix.
Like, I mean, I'm just looking at Leclerc in that first lap. You know, it's Silverstone. He was aggressive.
Had the shoulder
and you can get away with that at Britain because it's a, you know, it's a bit of a wider track. There's lots of runoff. Whereas Austria to me is a little bit more narrow. That first corner is really tight to get cars through there. Sure, you can overtake at turn it's kind of turn two, but it's officially turn three and turn four, but I don't know. There's something about that Austria track that just makes me think there's going to be fireworks.
Okay, interesting.
That's my prediction.
Well, the first thing, Rory, is that not both of our predictions can happen because I'm saying Leclerc number one.
Yeah.
You're saying Verstappen.
I think
number
there's a high chance that one of us will be fairly correct on one of our positions that we've placed. So that'll be good. So we'll stay tuned for the Austria Grand Prix that'll be coming up next week. It'll be next week because we had a break quite recently. That'll be next week. We'll try and endeavour to get up early and watch it live.
Yeah, let's try and watch a race together, guys.
Yeah. I think it'll be a 1 a.m.
If it's a 1 a.m, we can probably pull it off.
Let's do it.
Yeah.
But yeah.
So when is it next week?
It'll be next week. It'll be Monday morning for us.
So it's the Austrian Grand Prix. What's the race circuit called?
It's the Red Bull Ring.
Red Bull Ring.
Oh, the Red Bull.
Because they went to, was it last year they went to Zandvoort?
That's in the Netherlands. So we're going there later.
Oh, sorry, that's right.
It was also called Styria. Styria is the region that it's in. So it would be like having the New Zealand Grand Prix and the Canterbury Grand Prix.
Mm. Oh, okay.
It's sort of the idea. But it's this weekend coming up. So 1 a.m. Oh, it's a sprint weekend as well.
But we do have to go, guys.
Stephen's
been a very good
exciting
chat. It's been a very exciting podcast, guys. Show. It's been live as well. But yes, we will see you guys in 2 weeks.
We'll see you in a couple of weeks. Stay tuned for the Austria Grand Prix. We'll be back with all the coverage then. Enjoy it and take care, team.
Thanks for listening to 3Pre1Cast. If you want to catch up on any of our episodes, check us out on Plains FM, Apple Podcast, or Spotify.
Come and say hi to us on Instagram and TikTok at 3Pre1Cast.